याचित भेजे नवमं प्रतिभं दुग्धे माम ओषधीर विप्रास थेनायं स उषत्तमः. Brahmins, the ninth incarnation, the Lord, prayed for by the sages, accepted the body of a king, Prithu, who cultivated the land to yield various produces, and for that reason the earth was beautiful and attractive. This A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Before the advent of King Prithu, there was great havoc of maladministration due to the vicious life of the previous king, the father of Maharaj Prithu. The intelligent class of men, namely the sages and the Brahmins, not only prayed for the Lord to come down, but also dethrone the previous king. It is the duty of the king to be pious and thus look after the all-around welfare of the citizens. Whenever there is some negligence on the part of the king in discharging his duty, the intelligent class of men must dethrone him. The intelligent class of men, however, do not occupy the royal throne because they have much more important duties for the welfare of the public. Instead of occupying the royal throne, they prayed for the incarnation of the Lord, and the Lord came as Maharaj Prithu. Real intelligent men or qualified Brahmins never aspire for political posts. Maharaj Prithu excavated many produces from the earth, and thus not only did the citizens become happy to have such a good king, but the complete sight of the earth also became beautiful and attractive. We are reading this morning from Canto 1, Chapter 3 of Srimad Bhagavatam, which is entitled, Krishna is the Source of All Incarnations. Today, Maharaj Prithu is being discussed in this very beautiful purport by Srila Prabhupada. He is putting great emphasis on the responsibility of both the Brahmins as well as the administrative heads of the state. At one time in the early 1970s, Krishna consciousness movement was spreading miraculously, quickly in all directions, especially in the Western world. Srila Prabhupada came to the West with hardly eight US dollars, 30 rupees. No contacts in America to help him. No contacts in India who was willing to help him. Very humble beginning. But due to his determination and his compassion, in a matter of a few years, there were hundreds and thousands of books being distributed all over the world. There was tens and thousands of devotees chanting Hare Krishna. Hundreds of temples, beautiful spiritual centers, farm communities, schools, heads of state and other very influential people were coming to hear from Srila Prabhupada. So the devotees with great enthusiasm once approached Srila Prabhupada and said, when the world becomes Krishna conscious, we will make you the king. Srila Prabhupada replied, no, never will I be the king. I will be the guru for the king. The idea, of course, Prabhupada is living through his books, and it is still the great hope that we all have that in this age of Kali, that leaders of all sectors of society will accept Srila Prabhupada as guru by taking his books and living and ruling and leading according to the truths contained. But it is the most sacred and auspicious position of a Brahmin to oversee and give spiritual direction. Because the purpose of human life is God realization. Everything else is superficial. People live for the purpose of trying to create a situation in life where they can enjoy better forms of sense gratification. And democracy is a failing system as long as the general populace is not spiritually educated. If everyone's goal in life is to enjoy in forgetfulness of God, then people will elect leaders who will simply give better forms of material enjoyment in forgetfulness of God. The blind leading the blind, everyone falls into the well. And this is the situation throughout the world. One great Vaishnava poet gave a very concise and clear understanding of what this process of sense gratification is all about. The world is mad after sense gratification. Every aspect of life is motivated by the desire for selfless or extended sense gratification. But sense gratification is so nicely defined that it is like very enthusiastically licking sweet nectarine honey from the sharp edge of a razor blade with your tongue. Have any of you ever tried this? Licking honey off the sharp edge of a razor blade with your tongue. The fact is, the honey tastes nice, and there is some gratification there. But there's unlimited pain that comes as a result of it. Krishna explains in Gita, an intelligent person does not take part in the pleasures between the senses and their objects, because he knows such pleasures have a beginning and an end. And therefore, the enjoyments of the senses are the sources of all miseries in this material world. Philosophy is very important. The Because unless we understand the nature of how Maya is operating, we will be deluded. Just like when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted sannyas, he was only 24 years old, and he was the very embodiment of all beauty. He had such opulence. Now, for one in the renounced order of life, to be learned, beautiful, famous, strong, wealthy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had all these things. He was the most famous scholar. He was the most beautiful of all people. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was very much worried about him with parental affection. How is it possible for you to maintain the vows of renunciation when you're still so young and you're so attractive that the objects of Maya are just going to be coming your way throughout your life? There's going to be opportunity after opportunity for you to enjoy. The way Maya attacks is different than the enemies that we see on the battlefields of the world today. The enemy, you know who your enemy is, and they come with weapons to harm you. But Maya appears like the most attractive, wonderful friend or object of pleasure, comfort, security, happiness. And she'll even give you that. She'll give you and give you and give you until you become attached. Just like when you go fishing. I know none of you have ever gone fishing, but you put something very delicious at the end of the hook. The fish does not see the hook. All he sees is this very sumptuous feast. And when he swallows it, he doesn't feel the hook. He's only tasting this feast. It's so nice. Actually, when he first starts eating it, all he has to do is spit it out, and nothing will happen to him. If somebody was to give him some nice Bhagavad Gita class and tell him there's a hook in the worm, he could spit it out. But he thinks that this worm is very nice. And even if there is a hook in it, it doesn't matter. Because it's so enjoyable. So he goes on eating it, and swallowing it, and swallowing it. He enjoys his feast. But after that hook is firmly attached within his heart, then the fisherman pulls. And then there's suffering and death to the ignorant fish. Maya is the most expert fisherman. And the objects of the senses are the bait or the little feast she puts. And the threefold miseries are the hook. And we're all just eating, 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 enjoying, running after it. Even if we don't have it, we'll run after the objects of the senses. And we'll think this is very nice. But Krishna warns us, it is the source of misery and bondage. Kama esha krodha esha rajoguna shamudbhava mahashano mahapadma vidyanami halaya. It is lust or material attraction that is the great sinful enemy, the symbol of sin that is the source of all suffering in this world. So the purpose of human form of life is tapasya, to become free from the desire for sense enjoyment by utilizing the same senses in the service of the Lord. We become purified. And that is the purpose of the Brahmins, to always give that information and enlightenment to society. And that is the first and foremost purpose of anyone who takes a leadership position. Guru na sasyat, svajini na sasyat, pita na sasyat, jalini na sasyat. One should not be a guru, a parent, mother, father, a teacher, or a king, unless you can deliver your dependent from the cycle of birth and death. That is the first and foremost duty of any person taking a leadership position within human society. We find in this purport, Srila Prabhupada is describing, there was a king named Dana. He was the son of Anga Maharaj. Very illustrative story. Maharaj Anga was a great devotee. He was a descendant of Dhruva Maharaj. But somehow or other, due to some miscalculation, he happened to marry Death, personified daughter. So, especially in previous ages, things worked more often according to the prescribed methods. In the age of Kali Yuga, things are terribly mixed up on every level. But the son is supposed to take the example, the qualities of the father, of the mother. So the son, Maharaj Vena, was so cruel. When he was just a tiny little boy, instead of playing little sports with his friends, and laughing and jumping, he was torturing his friends and murdering them. That was his enjoyment. And then, because he was the only son, when he got older, it got worse and worse and worse. So Maharaj Anga, he was a great Vaishnava. He wanted his son to be a nice devotee. Just like any parent who's a devotee, it's their primary desire in life that their children become very great Vaishnavas or Vaishnavis. I remember some years ago, every parent used to tell me how their child was a demigod. Some even felt that he was a pure devotee because he says Krishna, or he says Prabhupada, when he was a little boy. And only the parents could translate it like that. To all the rest of us, it was just ma 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 ma. He's saying Prabhupada, don't you hear? So it was their pride and joy that their child was going to deliver them from the cycle of birth and death, that they were little paramhamsas, that they were demigods coming to take birth, to complete the cycle and go back to Godhead in this life. So Maharaj Anga was also a Vaishnava. And we see as the children grow up how heartbreaking it is to the parents if the child just doesn't have any taste for Krishna consciousness or starts associating with evil people, engaging in materialistic sinful activities. Very heartbreaking. I've seen parents just tortured within their hearts when their children eat meat or take intoxications or have girlfriends or boyfriends. You can't describe the pain that they suffer. So can you imagine the pain of Maharaj Anga? His son was a murderer and a rogue. from his very earliest days of childhood. And as he grew up, the more power he had, the more malicious he became in his violence to others. So he suffered for years. But then he became quite blissful. Because whatever the situation, however good or bad it may be in this world, as soon as you see the positive opportunity for devotional service, it can transform darkness into light. It can transform misery into ecstasy. Maharaj Anga, hope against hope, was trying to reform his son. But the more he tried, the worse his son became. When it was obviously hopeless, Maharaj Anga, in his miserable condition, began to philosophically reflect. He began to see things through the eyes of the scriptures. That actually, this is wonderful. Because if my child was a nice devotee, I would probably be so attached to him, I would have to take birth again and again and again, because I'd be attached to the body and the things related to the body. But it's really the Lord's mercy that he's such a rascal. I have absolutely no attachment for him. I have no attachment for my body. I have no attachment for my palace, for all of the wealth of my palace. I have no attachment for anything in this world. The world is a miserable place, and I'm going to go to the forest and surrender to Krishna. So he just one night, without saying anything to anyone, he left, following the path of transcendental life. Now, if you're a parent, you have your duty to be affectionate, responsible, protective, but at the same time, be attached to making them Krishna conscious for the pleasure of Krishna, in the service of Guru, not for our sense enjoyment. That is what our great acharyas have taught us. But Maharaj Anga is teaching, no matter what happens in life, no matter how it appears to be a total miserable failure, it's auspicious if somehow or other you turn to Krishna in that situation. Queen Kunti, she went through so many miseries and calamities. What we read in the Bhagavatam is just the surface of what she had to suffer. But you can imagine all the details of crises that her mind had to tolerate in her love for her children. But after Krishna coronated Yudhisthira as king, he was about to go to Dwarka. And she was praying, "Don't go. Better you give us the calamities again and stay here." She begged him, "Let those calamities come again and again and again. For in those calamities, we have no hope anywhere except in the shelter of your lotus feet. There is no situation in this entire material cosmos that can help us. As long as we have faith in material adjustments to bring us security and happiness, we cannot fully take shelter of Krishna. We have to lose wholesale all faith in any material adjustments for our real well-being." Srila Prabhupada said, do the needful. Utility is the principle. To keep body and soul together, we have to make certain adjustments. But that's not our shelter. That's just some superficial adjustment to bring about an arrangement by which I can fully take shelter of Krishna. Through chanting his names, through hearing his glories, through serving his devotees. So Kunti Devi, she prayed, let the calamities come. I begged Krishna, stay here and give us all calamities, take away everything. And what did Krishna do in return? He gave us the kingdom and left. Therefore, we are the most unfortunate, miserable people. Now that Krishna has given us this kingdom and left, I consider his real mercy will be my quick death. That is Kunti Devi's words. And Yudhisthira Maharaj, when he was king, he said, I was happier struggling in the forest with all of those problems. Because I was always thinking of Krishna, and Krishna was always coming to save us. I was happier in that situation than the burden of this kingdom, where everything's so nice, there's no enemies, there's no dangers. It was like a heavenly planet. To a devotee, that's miserable. So this is the purpose of life, to take shelter of Krishna. But in order to do so, we have to be detached from all of the hopes for shelter by any material adjustments in this world. We have to learn that licking the sweet honey from the edge of that razor blade is not going to give me happiness. It may taste good, but there's a terribly heavy price. So Maharajanga, through his frustration from any material hopes, he achieved ultimate enlightenment and became blissful. But now what to do? There's no king. So the Brahmins, they had Vena coronated as king. Because Prabhupada said, a blind uncle is better than no uncle at all. You have to have somebody there. The rogues and the thieves were plundering everything. The Brahmin saw that there was just a cloud of dust everywhere because the rogues and the thieves were just running around exploiting the resources of everyone. So one thing good about Vena is the rogues and thieves, they couldn't do anything in his presence. He punished them like Yamaraj himself. So from that point of view, it was very good. No more rogues, no more thieves. But there was one serious problem, that he was a bigger rogue and thief than all of the others put together. He simply eliminated all competition. He was so egoistic. No more chanting the names of Narayan. You chant my name. I'm the king, I'm the representative of God, you worship me. No more yajna to any of the gods or the god. You want to do yajna? To me. Every oblation for me. All prasad of the yajna for me. So he was undoing the very purpose of a civilization, God realization. Therefore the Brahmins, they came together. First they gave him every opportunity, they preached to him. They pleaded with him. They begged him. They threatened him. They did everything. But he was so egoistic because he had so much power, so much intelligence, that he couldn't listen to anyone. This is a big problem. If you have too much, you think too much of yourself, and then you can't hear, even when your well-wishers are speaking. This is the basic teaching of Bhagavad Gita. Until Arjuna was so humbled by his environment that he considered, I know nothing. I don't know who I am. I don't know where I am. I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I don't know what I'm not supposed to do. Krishna, please instruct me. then he could hear. If you think you know, no one can teach you. So Vena could not hear. All those people were his well-wishers. So ultimately, for his benefit and the others, by the chanting of mantras, he was killed. But as soon as he was killed, there was a somewhat of a celebration that he's gone. But then, again, the dust started coming up, because the rogues and the thieves started plundering everybody. People, innocent citizens, were coming forward, save us, we need a leader, we need a head, we need someone. So the Brahmins took the body of Vena and churned it. Now, of course, this is a previous age. Now people don't have powers to churn bodies. But through mantras, they churn the body. And the first thing that came out were all the sins of Vena. His name was Bahuka. And they sent him to the forest. Then they continued the churning, and by the power of their prayers and mantras, the Supreme Lord, Shaktivesh Incarnation, Ritu, along with his beloved consort, Arachi, ascended from the form of Vena. Ritu Maharaj and Archi were so very effulgent and full of all auspicious qualities. Immediately the sages, the rishis, and the brahmins started glorifying them. Ritu Maharaj told them to stop all this glorification. He said, I haven't done anything yet. Why are you glorifying me? And Srila Prabhupada explains that exaggerated glorification is very dangerous. If a person who is unqualified is glorified as being very qualified, then he starts thinking he's qualified, and that's his greatest disqualification. Ritu Maharaj, he said, you just be patient, don't say anything, and you see whether I do something or not. But none of this false glorification. But what a great king he was. Prabhupada gives the example here that when the earth was not giving proper crops in the form of fruits and grains and vegetables and herbs, it's the duty of the king to make sure everything goes nicely for the spiritual, social, and physical welfare of his citizens. So he was so angry. Nothing was growing. He drew his bow and arrow and pointed it at the earth. This is a powerful king. Mother Earth took the form of a cow, a female cow. Now, you're not supposed to kill cows, and you're not supposed to kill women. She was both. But Prithu was about to kill the cow. So she ran away, and he chased after. Because if she is living according to irreligious principles, she must be punished. So ultimately she surrendered, chastised her, said, it is your service to the Lord to provide. We are performing the proper yajnas, you are not providing. She explained, when Vena was king, there were so many rogues, first him and then the other rogues that followed him, because of their sins, I'm retracting the gifts of the earth. Srila Prabhupada is very clear in this regard. That the only shortage of anything is the shortage of Krishna consciousness. People are thinking there's not enough food, there's population explosions. And in Kali Yuga,
the solution to the problem becomes a greater disturbance than the original problem. There's not enough food because there's so much sinful activity and no proper yajna for the pleasure of the Lord. Anadvavanti bhutani parajanyananishamya. Krishna says, every living being lives by food grains, and they're produced by yajna. And they're retracted when they're sinful activities. So here we have a situation. India, on August 15th of 1999, the United Nations officially proclaimed that the population of India exceeded 1 billion human beings.
Hare Krishna.
Now, when that news came to the Western countries, people were very much worried, concerned, and upset. And how are they going to feed 1 billion people? And it also said in that article by the United Nations that within 7 years, or 7 to 10 years, India's population will exceed China's and be the most populous country in the world. Now this is seen as a big, big problem, because people think of India as starving people, begging people, diseased people. So what is their solution? Family planning, of course. Contraceptive and abortion. That's the solution to the shortage of food in the world. But the solution is the cause of the problem. The reason there's not enough food is because Mother Earth is retracting her potencies due to sinful activities. And then we want to murder innocent children by the millions. Somebody was telling me yesterday, an authority on the subject, average 12 million abortions in India every year. Now, when we hear about the apocalypse of World War II, over a period of about 10 years, there were 6 million innocent people killed. And that's supposed to be the great lesson that the world should live in. But here we find in 10 years, 120 million innocent children are murdered. And there's going to be a karmic reaction, individual and collective. And this is supposed to be the solution by which we'll have more food and more happiness. Actually, the earth, Bhumi Devi, is an expansion of the goddess of fortune, Bhuvaraha. She's the consort of the Lord. Lakshmi is Sita. If Sita is pursued through the exploitative motives of Ravana, she's no longer the real Sita. She's the false Sita. But in this world, there are innumerable Ravanas trying to exploit the resources of the earth. But if we understand the actual solution to the problem, Hanuman knew, just bring Sita back to Ram and everything will be perfect. Just the earth is providing everything as her offering to God, and if we just assist by taking what she gives and offering them to God, then she will give everything and more. But if we take her offerings to Krishna and we take it for our own selfish, fastidious purposes, then she will respond through cyclones, through earthquakes, through droughts, through fires, through plagues, through epidemics. Too much heat, too much cold, everything else. Shortage. So when Srila Prabhupada said the only real problem is a lack of Krishna consciousness, and the only solution is Krishna consciousness, this is a very complete, comprehensive understanding. Sometimes we think it's just too simplistic. But it's thoroughly comprehensive, and if we read his books, we understand how and why. So the earth began to produce unlimited opulence of grains and fruits and flowers, and beautiful rivers and streams and waterfalls, because Maharaj Prithu was ruling the citizens in a spirit of devotion. Thus, in this particular verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, we are worshipping Maharaj Prithu. He was a perfect living example of a humble devotee, even though having such a high and mighty position of the king of the planet. Simply the servant of all of his citizens. And the greatest service that Maharaj Prithu offered was his exemplary behavior. Yadyaracharati stestas tatar evitarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokasthanam. Because what great people do, common people naturally follow in their footsteps. Is there any questions? Namada Maharaji, would you like to give some? Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki. You have a question? Yes?
Krishna, you mentioned that one is one can endure its dependence, like he can become a guru or husband. So that means only pure devotees can become a husband or a guru.
Not like that. What it means is you have to be pursuing the path of pure devotional service. You don't have to be a pure devotee, but you should be pursuing the path by which you can become a pure devotee. And if you are pursuing the path by your example, and you are teaching that path to others, and connecting them to a pure devotee, then you can then that, just like we are trying to connect everyone to Srila Prabhupada, by getting them to follow his instructions and to have faith, by making that connection, he will deliver them from the cycle of birth and death. And you can be an instrument. And if you're not willing to be such an instrument, then the Shastras say you have no right to take such a position. Any other questions? Radharas Bihariji ki. Thank you very much.